irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
And wouldn't you ever be on this beautiful March 2nd in Los Angeles?
Really a beautiful Thursday afternoon, yeah, after all that rain.
What do you suppose the temperature is right now?
Let me check my pocket thermometer. I don't know. It's not so cold that I'm upset about it, and not so hot that I'm sweating.
Let's say 70?
Sure.
71, yeah. 72? Yeah.
I think so. Beautiful. We see the mountains, or the hills, I think they're called, over here in the San Fernando Valley. That is always nice to see them, because in the past couple of weeks, through our windows here in the studio, we couldn't see much of anything.
That's right. We have a beautiful vista here today.
We do indeed.
My dad used to say that driving through the mountains of Colorado. He'd say, "What a beautiful vista." I'm sitting in the back going, "What's a vista? I don't see the vista. All I see is mountains, man."
Well, Andrew, you know that I have had a crazy past several weeks, and I'm sure you have too, and we have a wonderful guest with us in the studio today.
We do. In fact, sitting next to me is someone our audiences will truly enjoy watching, and they can see him on stage at the Pantages Theater, can't they, Michael?
Yes, they can. That's right, because we are joined by Finding Neverland star and LA's next great stage star alumni, Cameron Bond, is here.
Yeah.
How did we get so lucky?
Welcome, Cameron. Welcome. I tell you, Cameron has sung the national anthem in front of 70,000 screaming fans. I assume they were all there just to see him. And he is truly one of America's most fine and greatest emerging theater talents. We will look forward to talking to him here about all of that and more. But first, Michael, I'm dying to know. Haven't seen you all week. How was your week?
Well, thank you. It was good. It was busy. Busy as heck, actually. Closing, of course, LA's Next Great Stage Star, as we had our winner on last week on this program.
Isn't he something special? Man.
He is.
He's
indeed
got a career ahead of him.
And it is the first time that a man has ever won this competition
so
in 11 years.
He's that good.
Yes, he is. He practically got signed on the spot and got hired by one of our major casting directors in that same moment. No, and he's off and running and on his way. He's doing the rounds of meeting with agents, and he's still kind of, you have to pinch him because he's not believing the whole thing. So.
Well, and so many great kids in that, young performers, I should say. They were kids to me. But, I mean, what great performers you had in that. We had Natalia and Mitchell last week as well. But so many really great performers in that competition this year. It was fun to watch.
It's so nice. I mean, from the days that Cameron was in the competition a few years back, 2014, and you know, the competition has grown in popularity and also
mostly
in its
because
production.
Of Cameron, right?
Yes, yes, he kind of launched it for us. Yeah, but we've been able to, thanks to the good people at Princess Cruises, we are now
that's incredible.
You know, in theaters with 302 theaters now. So it's all really.
No, I'm so happy to see that.
Stage that's Star a great
really,
thing.
Really, really helped me get on my feet and into the business and into the, you know, the needed repertoire of Southern California, which then brought me to New York, and now I'm on tour. So it really was the starting point for me.
So you're living the dream.
I'm living the Stage Star.
So how much percentage do you send Michael from each job you get? I'm just curious.
Actually, a majority of 55%. Just sold my soul.
Well, I got to tell you, it's interesting to watch Stage Star because you realize what a positive thing it is, because it's something where each child, each performer gets something that they get to do, but they also get this feedback that you don't get anywhere else on the planet. You go into a normal audition, and you never know what they say about you, unless you get the job.
Yeah.
But this one, you get to listen to it, and you realize how much those judges care about each of those young performers. It's interesting to
definitely.
Watch.
And it's very dynamic, and it's very subjective also.
Right.
The performer needs to take to have an open mind and accept the information as it's being given to them, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent.
Right.
And if they agree with it, they agree with it. If they don't, they don't.
Yeah.
And that shows up in their work at some point if they digest everything and put it to its test. And many of them, as always is the case every year, don't start turning that corner and accepting that kind of information in whole until about the third or fourth week. That's when starts to settle in.
It seems like it,
exactly. So at any rate, we look forward to the coming year and our continuing relationship with Princess Cruises, hopefully, will be the case. And other than that, I did have the pleasure, of course, of seeing Cameron in Finding Neverland at the Pantages an opening night, and what a spectacular show it is. It's, it's just as dear and as important, really, I think, in the scheme of of shows that are about something of this nature, which is kind of the precursor to Peter Pan. And that in itself is interesting right out of the gate.
Right.
And the talent, of course, speaks for itself in the show. Mm-hmm. They're wonderful, beautifully gifted people who just transcend the score and make everything fly through that Act 1 and Act 2, which is really the big payoff.
No doubt, So you saw Finding Neverland. Was that the only theater you saw this week?
I did.
That is a light week for you, my friend.
Yes, it was. I had to decline going to the opening of another show at the Amundsen Theater, which I had wanted to see, but it was just too much. I had way too much that I was coming out of. You know, you have to sometimes make that decision.
Yeah.
I'll go catch it on another night, but not the opening. So how was your week?
It was good. I had a lot of jobs that were kind of scattered and strange. I was in Santa Bernardino and then up to Santa Barbara for part of it, back down to Orange County. So I put the miles on my poor, tired car, which has been...
Some of our listeners may not know exactly why... what you're talking about as far as your work.
Well, my wife won't let me come home, so she just locks the door. I have to go to those places to find a place to sleep each night, knocking on doors.
No,
I
work not true.
I work as a fight choreographer, so I travel quite a bit. And as you know, we talked last time on I wish I could take the train, but I usually have epes with me or a broadsword tucked in the back of my car, so I can't just take it on the train and go with me. So the car has been getting a lot of miles on it. But I took the time out to go see one of my friends, Kat Renee, in her new solo show. It's a painting show. She's an artist. And it's called Tales of the Ragged Doll, and she's taken basic household objects, you know, usually a broken doll or a rag doll or sometimes a lamp and something like that that's been broken and no longer used. And she paints it and kind of gives it new life. And it was just absolutely gorgeous. And you realize how many talented friends we have that we don't always appreciate. So Kat Renee, if you get a chance to look at her website, you can just Google her and find her work. But I was reminded of how many talented people live in Los Angeles, how many people we shake hands with on a daily basis that, you know, tomorrow could change the world. So that was a really fun break from the hard work this week and all
very
the
craziness. Nice.
Yeah.
And is her work still up? Is it in the gallery?
It actually just finished. Her show was just, I think, a one weekend show.
Oh, okay.
But they still sell, and I guess she's got a significant
career.
She
have a website?
She does. I believe it's katrenee.org, but if you Google Kat Renee, Tales of the Ragged Doll, it'll pop up. But it was just, it was interesting reminder of how many things go on that, boy, I mean, if I'd had a job that night, I would have missed it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's interesting. That's why we encourage our friends to go to performingartslive.com.
That's
check
right.
out all the great shows that are going up, but all the things we have here in Los Angeles that I tell you, I sure didn't get growing up in Colorado and Kentucky. So.
Thinking of places that our listeners should check out, we should thank our sponsor.
That, my friend, is a very good idea.
We want to be here next week.
In just a moment, we will obviously come back to Mr. Bond,
absolutely.
Cameron Bond, and talk to him here in a moment about Finding Neverland, but let's do thank our sponsors first.
Absolutely. Breakdown Services is our sponsor, ladies and gentlemen, as you well know if you listen to this show with regularity. The entertainment industry's... Excuse me. So sorry. The entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts.
And now, Andrew... It's that time.
Yes, indeed it is. Michael, our first guest is a San Diego native who burst onto the musical theater scene in 2014. He made his Broadway debut in Finding Neverland, understudying the lead role of J.M. Barrie after a strong showing at L.A.'s Next Great Stage Star. His soaring vocals have blown the doors off of theaters across the country on national tours of Finding Neverland and Beauty and the Beast. He has captured the hearts of regional theater audiences and shows such as Les Mis, Damn Yankees, Into the Woods, Legally Blonde, and again is the indomitable Gaston in Beauty and the Beast. He holds a degree in business advertisement from Azusa Pacific University and is an avid volleyball player, chef, restaurateur, international traveler, and beer connoisseur. He is a performer as nimble and swift on stage as he is navigating the streets of Manhattan on his mini blue skateboard. State of the Arts is proud to have him here with us today to talk about his role in Finding Neverland, now on stage at the beautiful Pantages Theater in Hollywood, California, through March 12th. Please welcome Cameron Bond.
That's great.
That's my entire composition and literature degree going to work right there. As I tell you, you have so many resources out there on you, man, where it's just like one snippet of, oh, Cameron was great in this. I was reading through your stuff, and my favorite thing that I saw was that mini blue skateboard clip. I thought that was fantastic. Is that really what you do in Manhattan?
Yeah, it's now actually a mini black skateboard. I just got a new one for my birthday. You know, those penny boards, it's like smaller.
Right, of course.
Way too small for any human being to ride.
But dangerous place to skateboard, man.
Yeah, I mean, there's bike lanes.
Yeah.
It's
that nobody observes, as I recall. So.
So it's an actual skateboard. It's not the kind that you stand on and it wheels you around.
No,
right?
I do all the work.
Yeah. Yeah. You do all the work. That's as it should be.
I'm San Diego local. I grew up skateboarding to school, and so it's a part of me. It's my 10-year-old self coming out as a 26-year-old adult. So.
Well, now I got to ask you about your name. Were you blessed with this fantastic name, Cameron Bond?
My mom's maiden name is Bond.
Okay.
My legal name is a nice Polish last name.
Nice.
That looks like Szczepka. So I was like, you know what? After a few auditions and people being like, I'm sorry, how the heck do you say your name?
Right.
Where is it from? I was like, you know what? My mom's maiden name is probably easier. I'm going to go with that.
Well, I tell you, what a great name for a musical theater performer, Cameron Bond. It just sounds like
Cameron
he's ready to play
Bond.
A lead, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny. I think that names out here, I've done the same thing. Andrew James is not what I was technically born under, but you get so tired of people mispronouncing your name over and over again. You just kind of say, I'm done with it. So that's fantastic.
Yeah. No relation to James Bond.
Right. Well, don't tell people that. You drive the BMW, nobody will ever know, you know?
Yeah, I got to work on that BMW.
You know, it's funny. I've seen so much of your work in researching you for this, but my favorite performance of you comes as I was sitting next to my then 7-year-old daughter as you played Gaston. What a great role. You've done that multiple times, correct?
Yes,
and this one I saw
my
favorite
role.
Yeah. I saw this at 3D Theatricals.
Yep.
And that was what a fun show.
He came
that
back
was.
And did them a favor by doing the role because really. He had done the U.S. National Tour already.
They did me the favor, actually. They gave him my equity card, which allowed me to go to New York and. Get seen in open calls a lot easier and thus get my Broadway debut in Finding Neverland. So
amazing.
Really,
as well they should. They should have done that.
Well, and they did a great show. It was obviously up to those standards and your performance was great. But I want to say to those of us who are listening out there who may have young children and may not know this, there is something you see change in your kids when you take them to live theater. Whatever you see on the couch when they're watching TV, the excitement, it's a different kind of excitement when they're watching live theater. They're engaged with an actual performer there in front of them. That kind of storytelling is something that every parent owes their child. So,
absolutely. Well, let's talk about the story of Finding Neverland,
yes.
Cameron. This is, as we said earlier in the beginning of the program, it's a precursor to Peter Pan and from the author's point of view in the story.
Right. So J.M. Barrie is the playwright of Peter Pan. That was written in 1904.
Wow.
Which is crazy to believe it's a century old, over a century old. And back then in 1904, there wasn't family-friendly entertainment or a children's show like we know, like most things are nowadays with Disney and all those family-friendly oriented shows. And so J.M. Barrie was quite revolutionary and got a lot of flack for creating this childish show. And no one believed in him. Everyone doubted what he was doing, thought he was going off the deep end. And he, true story, met this family, the Llewellyn Davies boys. It was a widowed mother and her four, in the real life it's five boys, but the youngest wasn't really born yet anyway. So there's four boys and he genuinely meets them and their names are Peter, Jack, George, and Michael. And some of those names you recognize from
the show, that's right.
And Sylvia, his love interest that he grows fond with is inspired for Wendy and you meet that. His producer, Charles Frohman, real person who produced the Peter Pan, is seemingly familiar to a Captain Hook, and you kind of see the inspirations legitimately that J.M. Barrie had in his life as he created Peter Pan, and then eventually in the show we put on the play Peter Pan for the family who inspired it all.
Cool.
And it's a great musical. It has so much in it for all ages, really. There's a lot of humor involved that I don't think people expect to see. It's a lot more family friendly enjoy, you know, people have a pre-notion of the movie with Johnny Depp and being more dark.
That's true.
People have a lot more dark tones and more, you know, more serious, and this is definitely a family-friendly musical, so have that in mind when you're coming to see.
Would you say appropriate for all ages? I know the Pantages doesn't allow kids under five, I believe.
Yeah, I would recommend probably seven and up.
Okay.
It just depends on the attention span, really, of the child. But it's definitely for the
If it depends on the attention span, I may not be allowed in the theater either.
Yeah,
so.
I know, right?
It's interesting. Finding Neverland, of course, the movie you mentioned came out a little while back. But the story itself, just the history of it, you can certainly Google that and find out some of it. Really a fascinating life that Jay and Barry led.
Very.
Yeah.
Very much so. You know, and let's go back a little bit with you, Cameron. You went to school, as we read in your intro, and you studied business. And this was something that, how did it sit with you?
Business advertising.
I mean, this was something
that
you did. Yeah. It was a smart thing that you
did,
actually.
Definitely.
And I know that his parents were instrumental in making that happen as well and wanted him to get a business degree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think how our structure of education set up is quite difficult because we're forced to decide what we, quote unquote, want to do for the rest of our lives at the age of 17.
Make the decision now. Go,
yeah,
go.
I'm like, I have no idea. And so after consulting my family and friends, I decided to go to a school that could provide a broad range of access to many industries in Azusa Pacific, which is, you know, in San Fernando Valley, I guess. Is that San Fernando?
I think it is technically.
In Azusa,
yeah.
East of Pasadena. A school that I could be, per se, in a broad business degree and participate in theater and choir without being a major in those departments, whereas some schools you have to be in the program to even participate in the show. So I kind of was able to get a broad sense of, like, what do I actually want to do while I'm figuring out how I'm an adult.
Yeah.
I got the business degree, and then I went on to do advertisement work in L.A. and New York, both for large creative agencies. And
you worked for a number of great companies as well.
Yeah,
I mean, through
I'm fortunate. Procter & Gamble, NFL, and then but I just kind of realized I wasn't being fulfilled creatively, and so I kind of took the plunge in seeing L.A. Stage Door online. I was like, what's this? And I saw, like, some people like Derek Klena who had gone through there. I'm like, oh, wow, this is great.
Yeah.
And that's what really got me to audition for Stage Door. And then was like, is this something for me? Can I do theater? And, I mean, I didn't do all that well at Stage Door, but I've always been a fan of just never stop learning. And so I learned so much from doing Stage Door, and it got me an agent, and then met me with regional theaters of 3D, La Mirada, and worked at all those places, and then was fortunate enough to get the National Tour of Beauty and the Beast, which then led me to New York, and just kind of never stopped learning, kept getting experience, and now I guess I am a full-time actor now. This is behind me for now.
You actually did do very well at Stage Door. You just don't know where that was as far as the rankings of it. But I assure you, you did very well.
Well, it was a great learning experience and definitely something out of my comfort zone of just being a microphone and you standing there. Was a different environment for me than being on stage.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely.
Did you know at the time that not winning wasn't the end of the world? That it wasn't a big problem not to win the competition?
I knew from early on that I wasn't going to win. And so... I've never needed to necessarily win as long as I can. It's a win if I feel like I've gotten better and learned from the experience, then I did win. Because if I leave stubborn or upset, then it doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah, I think that's one of the greatest gifts we can give performers these days is to say, hey, look, you know, it's not the end of the world. It's all part of a growth process.
Right.
The audition, the callback, even if you don't book the role, it's part of the process of growth.
Well, Cameron worked very hard in the competition. He was very committed to his song choices throughout the weeks, and that makes all the difference in the world as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
And I think that makes a difference in anything that you choose, whether you're studying business and then practicing it in real life. And if there's a disconnect, such as you felt, then you shouldn't be doing that. You should be doing what it is that your heart wants you to do.
Right? My heart wants to nap all through the day. Oh, my heart
really?
Desires that. And eat bacon. Those two things would make
really?
Me... Oh, I tell you, that'd be my perfect day. You know, so I was at a fight class the other day, and we always go around and we ask everybody, what's your dream to be doing if you could just do anything that you just didn't have to earn a living, they'd just pay you to do that. And I said skiing. I think I could ski every day for the rest of my life and be really happy.
Yeah.
But it was interesting to hear what people went around. So many people in this fight class said, oh, I'd love to sing with a rock band or something like that. You realize that really is a common dream that so many people don't end up exploring. It's even people in the arts don't explore that. So
I want to go back to Neverland now and your position with the show, being that you are an ensemble member who is understudying the lead, the male lead in the show, and you had this opportunity to make your Broadway debut in the show and go on for in that role on Broadway. What was that day like? Tell us about that. When did it happen? When did they notify you?
I found out day of. I had a little bit of a warning that it was Tony Yazbek was the current Barry. And he, you know, he's amazing, and he works in other industries as well. So he might have had a television shoot, and Our other cover for Barry was on vacation, and I was the new guy into the show. So typically, you don't get to go on, but since due to the circumstances, I got my debut in the same Broadway show that I debuted in, and my whole family had barely enough notice to fly out.
Wow, that's amazing.
I had some cousins randomly going to that show anyways.
Really?
Yeah, I got luck out, and a lot of friends stacked tickets, so it was a really cool emotional experience that I just never, honestly, ever would have thought would have happened. So it was a unique.
They always say that they don't give the understudies much time to step into the role. Was that the case on that day?
I had a put-in rehearsal. So as an understudy, you get the chance to do the show in costume with no audience, with all the elements. So I did get one of those, maybe like a month or two prior. it's our job. That's our job, to be prepared and be on, ready to go on at a moment's notice. So
I think I'd rather not have the notice and have to brew over it for a couple of days. I think I'd rather, this is what you're doing.
Because I'm an overthinker. So I'm like, in 2 days' time, you're going on for the lead. Don't get sick. And don't
right.
And get lots of sleep. You're like, great, now I'm not going to do all three.
Exactly. So on that day when they advised that you were going on that night,
it was,
you were ready for this.
I was ready.
You weren't apprehensive. You weren't concerned. You were ready.
I mean, as a theater performer, we're all apprehensive on everything.
Right.
But, I had to just go for it and be confident and know that whatever, I have to trust my, the time that I've put into the role preparing and just go for it and just enjoy every moment of it, because I didn't get another chance at it, and I didn't know if I would, so I just really embraced the moment and just lived in that moment, and it was an incredible experience for me.
So how does it work now that you are a performer that's gaining with some note with the people that you're working with, these high-end people that are...
Yeah, our cast is really well stacked.
Absolutely. And what happens when you're out there on the road? Do your agents still pitching you for things that are coming up in the future, or what?
Yeah, it varies for each person. We're all in contracts, obviously, so it depends on what your contract allows.
Right.
With outs and whatnot. I think with this business, everyone is typically always keeping an eye on what can be next, since gigs ebb and flow so quickly. Everyone's always keeping a hand on the pulse of the industry as well, full into the committing to the show that they're in at the time. So that's like a balance that comes and goes. Typically, people on the road are limited to video submissions. And so with our technology these days, it's a lot easier to leave the live Skype.
Thank goodness for that,
video.
Right?
Mm-hmm. You kind of just play by ear.
Speaking of moving on, and you mentioned Derek Klena, who was a Stage Star alum as well, who placed fourth in his year.
Okay.
But he went to New York and has, right off the bat, started enjoying off-Broadway success, which got him to Broadway very quickly.
Wow.
That's incredible.
Yes, and now he is getting ready to open in Anastasia.
Amazing.
As the young male lead in that show.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's he's kind of in a disbelieving situation that that's even happened for him.
No, he's incredible. I've seen him live in Bridges and... I have tons of mutual friends with him, so he's a great performer and a great guy.
Terrific guy, and a beautiful family, and they're all very talented. His siblings are very, very talented. They come into the nightclub all the time, and they certainly support Stage Star. And this guy in our studio today is someone who has given a testimonial to Stage Star, and what a beautiful thing that was for our 10-year anniversary, as many of the past alums and winners did do so. How nice to have you sitting in the studio this time, because you've been on the show before, but we did it via phone.
Aha. Uh-huh.
A little bit different.
I had a business job then, so I couldn't escape on my lunch break.
That's literally what happened. That's right.
Well, obviously, Michael and I do this show because we love the performing arts. I mean, of course, obviously, musical theater is one of the huge focuses, but film and television, obviously, the visual arts of any kind, we're big fans of, and I think you're obviously such a good ambassador of that. But you, my friend, you have crossover appeal. You have sung for football fans, which has to be hard to do. You sang at did we decide it was a elimination game for the Broncos at the end of the regular season, correct?
The
Patriots,
Bowl,
of course. Patriots. Of course. Yeah. And that was this past season, correct?
Yep, that's correct, yeah.
And you sang in front of what? Invesco Field, I think, holds 70-something, 73,000 or something.
They're like, how many people are in attendance? It was like 69.
Right. And I happened to be watching that at the time, and I remember thinking the way they'd kind of build it was going to be the entire cast of Neverland, Finding Neverland, which I thought was cool. And you stepped out there. What was that like to perform in that atmosphere after being in the somewhat confined version of a theater normally? Now you're out there in front of everybody in an open air stadium.
Right. Yeah, and that atmosphere in Denver in winter is 8 degrees.
At the altitude.
At the altitude with a -12 wind chill that day. And I'm from San Diego, so I'm a baby when it comes to cold weather. So that was the most challenging, to like, if you breathe in too deep, you literally just cough because it's freezing.
Yeah.
And then the elements of a stadium scene, which I've never done, and I've heard how hard it is, but having the echo of yourself delayed, like maybe like a half second behind you, is such a mind game. But it was an awesome experience that I got through Neverland doing press for them. So I'm so thankful that they trusted me upon seeing in front of that many people. And it was an experience that I never thought I'd get to do. And now I can say that I've done. And maybe I don't know if I want to do it again because it's so nerve-wracking. But, you know, you never know.
Well, you gave an amazing rendition that day, obviously. But it's funny to think about how many people watch that national anthem just to see if the dude blows it. You know, it's like, hey, is he going to mess up? You
know, yeah. And it's funny to watch that. Wondering, like, all right, what is this victim going to do?
Because you've seen some bad ones in the past. And it's interesting because I think it does have that, oh, let's see what happens kind of anticipation. And that was such a great version. I love hearing a really beautiful version of the national anthem.
Appreciate it.
So now, what did you get for that? What did they pay you to do that? Or is there some sort of stipend, or are there tickets to the game?
He had a heart attack from that, is what he had.
What I got was, you know, obviously transportation to the the game. I got to watch it in the Champions Alumni Suite.
Sweet. Oh,
now hold on.
With the alumni players with full spread of like catered delicious food and an open bar. Yeah. So after I sang, that's what I might have hit up. just calmed my nerves. It was amazing. Yeah, great view of the game. And obviously it was a hyped game because the Broncos needed a win to continue on to playoffs, and they're playing the Patriots, which were the favorite.
Right.
And it was just a very intense game, and I got to meet tons of players, and it was the perks galore.
So. Now, did people want to talk to you about the anthem after the whole game? Did they want to come up?
Yeah, people were really nice. So, like, they're like, hey, wait, you sang, right? I'm like, yeah. They're like, oh, man, good job.
That's probably not as pleasurable if you do miss that high note, right?
Yeah, no, right. A little more awkward walking around.
That's funny. Like, I didn't know that's what they did with the performers, that they sent them upstairs to the Grand Suite. That's awesome.
Get treated. I got they gave me, like, $150, like, really cool jacket. This is Broncos. I'm from San Diego. Well, Chargers, that's not how
not
that.
Anymore, yeah.
But, as I am from San Diego, you know that.
I didn't know that.
Broncos for a day, and I still wear it around, you know.
AFC West, baby, you're in good shape.
I'll represent
AFC West. If you told me when I was 7 years old that I would have gotten that kind of treatment, I'd have learned to sing. I'll tell you, brother.
You know, I did have an experience. One of my clients, Robert Goulet, the great Robert Goulet,
sang
the anthem here for a Dodgers game, and which I set up for him, and his wife wanted him to do it. He didn't ask for it to be done, and he was very nervous when he did it.
Cool.
But he did an amazing performance. And, you know, it is very daunting, and I'm sure it probably was on screens, right, in the stadium. Yeah. That's happening at the same time.
And helicopter flyovers and and fireworks. Seriously, fireworks three times during the song and a helicopter flyover. So you're, like, trying to time yourself to those as well. And
wartime singing.
You like telling you faster, slower. You're like also trying to listen. It's just like the hardest thing I've ever done.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you nailed it, and that was a great thing. But it must be one of those things that you check off the list. Not something you want to do for a career, but I did that. That's amazing. You think there's people who have to do that in open-air stadiums all the time. Yeah. It's a real challenge. Well, we'll obviously come back with Cameron in just a little bit. But for now, let's take a quick break, and we will explore our live arts calendar, Michael.
Absolutely. Let's talk about that. Forever Plaid. Four young singers killed in a car crash find themselves miraculously revived from the dead. Since the accident happened while on their way to their first ever big concert, they're thrilled that they get to fulfill their dream and perform the show after all. Even though it's more than 50 years later and they're at International City Theater.
What better way to launch into spring than with a goofy, charming musical escape? Forever Plaid by Stuart Ross, one of the most popular and successful off-Broadway musicals in history, opened February 17th at International City Theater.
Co-directed by former Plaid's Scott Dreyer, who's a wonderful performer, and Curtis Simmons, this ICT revival stars Jackson Hinden as Sparky, Travis Leland as Frankie.
Yeah, Travis Leland.
Who also in stage door with Cameron, actually.
Close friend of mine.
Yes, Robert Petraca. How do you say that?
Petraca.
Petraca, okay, as Smudge, and Nick Tubbs as Jinx, singing in close harmony, squabbling over the smallest intonations and excuse me, I am not doing well today, and executing their choreography with gentle, comedic abandon. The Four Plaids will keep everyone smiling and humming along to some of the great pop hits of the 1950s. Now entering its final weekend of performances, Forever Plaid runs Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 8 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m. through this Sunday, March 5th. Tickets are $47 on Tuesday and Friday and $49 on Saturday and Sunday. International City Theater is located in the Long Beach Performing Arts Center at 330 East Seaside Way in Long Beach. And for reservations and information, it's very simple. Call 562 area code 436-4610.
Again, that number is 562-436-4610, or you can obviously just go to International City Theater, that's theater with an R-E, internationalcitytheater.org, and you can find tickets there.
Absolutely. They do such great work down there as well, and we encourage our listeners to visit performingartslive.com to find out about this and all the other great shows going on in Southern California.
That's right, Michael, including the show that we're talking about here today, the amazing
Absolutely.
Finding Neverland. That's
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely, and we are once again pleased to be joined by the immensely talented Cameron Bond about one of the most, here today talking about one of the most highly praised shows in decades, now on stage at the Hollywood Pantages Theater.
Finding Neverland, obviously, and we want our listeners to pay close attention to this because it's only here through March 12th, is
that
correct?
Yes, and if aren't able to get to Pantages by then, we're also going down to Seegerstrom in Orange County.
Oh, good.
In Costa Mesa.
March 21st through April 1st for two weeks there as well. So,
but I got to tell you, we would advise you to make it out to the Pantages because that's such a pleasurable theater-going experience. You get to see a beautiful building.
I grew up going to see shows there, so getting to perform there is full circle for me.
Well, it's absolutely great, and Finding Neverland, as we said, runs through March 12th.
And tickets are available at HollywoodPantages.com or Ticketmaster.com, or you can certainly go to the Hollywood Pantages box office. Daily it is open, and that's really, I always think that it's the best way to get good tickets because you have a personal connection with the person you're speaking to. You can look sad and disappointed. You can put on...
if you're an actor, I guess you can go put on a whole performance. Oh. I like walking up to that box office, seeing that beautiful marquee, and walking across, you know, the Hollywood Walk of Fame, of course, runs right in front of the Pantages. It's a nice experience. You get to see something that you don't get to see other places in the country. So,
Cameron, you're in Finding Neverland, this amazing show, and you're such a young man and such a talented one, and you've done some great shows in your career thus far. What is a pre-existing show that you have always dreamt about doing?
Oh,
there must be a
producers listen to this show, my friend, so choose your words carefully.
There's a lot of shows. Two came to mind, so I'll just say both. Into the Woods is one of my favorite
which
shows.
Which you've done, correct?
I have done, but I didn't do Cinderella's Prince Wolf, which is the part that I'm more drawn to. He's basically like a prince version of Gaston, technically. But that role, as well as Javert in Les Mis, I'm still a little young for that one, but I'm hoping to age into it. Or anything Robert Goulet's done, I'd like to.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really? Well, and a nice little segue, another of your cast members, Matt Quinn, who we talked about, Matthew Quinn, who we talked about earlier, I saw him perform, I believe it was Cinderella's Prince, directed by John Engstrom years ago, and my wife was in that show. That's actually how my wife and I met.
She
played Rapunzel. So it's interesting when you look at that show, Into the Woods. I remember I was very young the first time I saw it, and the theater was drastically empty after the first half of the show, after intermission, and I thought people had left because maybe they didn't like it, which was strange because it was a fantastic performance that I was watching, and you realize that half the audience thought it was over with that wonderful fairy tale ending at the end of Act 1, and nobody knew that there was this Act 2 coming up, so Sondheim once again blowing the doors off. So,
you know, in Neverland, you work with such great people. We mentioned that lightly earlier in the program, and you're understudying the role of J.M. Barrie, which is played by Billy Harrigan.
Mm-hmm.
How do you say the last name?
Ty.
And you've got Tom Hewitt. Oh, my God.
He was the most talented professional I've ever worked with.
Until Michael and I, right? Okay, good.
He plays Charles Frohman and Captain Hook.
Fantastic.
So, because the minute that he walks out on the stage, you just like his presence. Okay.
It's just something about, he's a Tony nominated Broadway legend. And so there's just something like when he's in his element on stage, you just like sit back and you're like, wow.
He is there.
And
he
his
just
voice just booming his acting, his comedy chops, his voice,
he's, and his beats. He knows his beats, man, you know, and he's delivering dialogue. And what a pleasure it was to watch him throughout the entire show. It was wonderful to watch everybody, but somebody like that, you just automatically you just gravitate to. Has he been instrumental in kind of giving you advice? Have you ever asked him for advice?
Oh,
or?
Yes, definitely. I mean, he's also a very humble person, so he'll never take it upon himself to be the first person to necessarily give you advice because mm-hmm. he's, you know, thinks he's just another performer. He doesn't necessarily consider himself
right.
as a Broadway guru. But now he's very a great mentor, a great leader. He's definitely leads our cast day to day. We also have Christine Dwyer.
Yes,
incredible. She was an Elphaba for many years.
Playing Sylvia Llewellyn.
Sylvia mm-hmm.
and, Davis.
And now Billy as well. Just joined us a few weeks ago. He's been an Elder Price, a Fiero on Broadway and the West End. He's incredible. Great performer, vocal chops, and brings a nice new element to Jay and Barry.
Yeah. Well, what a wonderful opportunity for you to work with these kinds of people and in show business here, and especially the theater business, every show you do, you become a member of an extended family.
That's absolutely true.
Pretty much remains in your life, you know?
That's right, for good or bad.
For good or bad, however you want.
People calling you up to stay with you years later. Remember when we did that show together in the 90s? That was great. I had a good friend who was on tour with the show for years, and he described it as kind of being locked in an airplane cabin, because you feel like you're always with these people. And it's part of one of the reasons that you create such a good chemistry is you do spend so much of your time with those people. Has that been a fun part of it, or has it been challenging to spend this time with these people as you tour around the country?
I mean, it's you definitely become a family, and families both endlessly love each other as well as can, you know, bicker. No, we've actually been fortunate. This cast gets along really, really well. And yeah, it's been a lovely experience.
How many tour dates have you had? Is this the beginning of the tour, or is it somewhere in the middle?
About 5 months in.
Wow.
And so we have dates. The tour has dates for the next 2 years, I believe. We're going to Japan and Tokyo and continuing all over the U.S. It's a great show.
Well, so it's fantastic. An international tour as well. I didn't know that.
Yeah, we're going to Tokyo for 3 weeks.
Are you on that portion of the tour?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yes. Well, we hoped it so.
Yeah.
We should tell write the producers.
We'll start a writing campaign. We'll tell Tokyo people to start sending in letters, man.
You would never have it. Just perform in that part of the world is a very different experience
I can
than
imagine.
Performing in America.
Yeah.
I mean, they're very appreciative, but in a different kind of way. But that's wonderful. And Kathy Rigby, of course, as Peter Pan, and
she saw the show a few days ago.
Oh, did she? Great. Yeah. Did she come back and say hello to everybody?
Well, her and Tom Hewitt did Peter Pan for years.
Of course.
And Tom, of course, the show she was at, he got bronchitis. Or
no.
So poor thing, did get to see him go. But
And you went up and said?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Of course.
Actually, I think Matthew Quinn did.
Oh, how funny.
Wow. In that show. Maybe it was our other Matt will be. I think he went. I don't remember. Either way, Kathy Rigby came and saw the mm-hmm. show, which was awesome. she's like the nicest woman ever.
Yeah. She just recently sang at Sterling's upstairs at the Federal.
Great.
And of course, she couldn't get out of there.
Right.
Without every
so
person
fans.
Needing
well,
to
sure.
have a photograph.
She's the real deal.
God bless her. And she stood there and took all of them.
Well, she is something special, no doubt about it. Now, you just had three performances in the lead role, is that correct?
Yeah, so sicknesses come and go in a tight-knit family cast.
Right.
So we've had some weird spells going on in our cast. But yes, our lead, Billy, unfortunately got bronchitis, which is
my
not
goodness.
A fun one at all. And had to miss the past few shows, so I got three whacks at it. Three goes. So that was really fun.
And some of your family was able to see that, is that correct?
Yeah, it was my birthday weekend this last weekend.
Look at that kismet in your life on getting to go up, man. That's fantastic.
And on the Pantages stage, it was a really nice birthday weekend that I couldn't have planned for. So
absolutely.
It was a really, really great experience. Probably had 50 people get to see those three shows.
Wow.
So great. How do you, let me ask you something from a touring standpoint. How do you manage your personal life? Do you have your... I know you had a girl back in New York. Is that still happening?
She's still there and lovely as ever.
Yeah? Does she get to come out and see you?
Yeah, she visits when she can. She's also a performer, so I'm not going to lie, it's difficult. Long distance is not fun for any relationship.
Yeah.
But yeah, you manage, and you know, when the love's there, it's worth anything. So
yeah.
We, you know, FaceTime's a lovely invention. So
that's true.
We FaceTime. You
got to look good, though, all the time.
My girlfriend might be listening, so hi. But also what's nice about relationships on tour is you're in all these cities across the U.S., and people from childhood and other places you've met in life also move. So when you are in Denver and you randomly catch up with like two great college buddies that you would not have seen otherwise, it's also an amazing chance to catch up on all and rekindle all the friendships that you've had that have now spread into different parts of the U.S.
Now, did they notify you that they're going to be at the show before you?
Yeah, usually, I mean, people see that you're in a show and they see advertisements and they're like, oh my gosh, you're coming to my city. Like, I live here now. And you're like, oh my God, you do? Great, let's hang out.
So and then they hit you up for tickets.
Which I never have. It's a blessing that, you know, finally everything's selling so well, so we don't really get...
I'll say.
Yeah, right. Do you have a favorite city? I mean, obviously, you've toured with a number of shows. Do you have a favorite city that you look to see if that city's on the tour stops when you're taking
and
the contract?
And to that, and I add this, and are audiences any different?
Oh, audiences vary, yes. Same with house. It also depends on the theater design. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we performed in St. Louis, which was, at the Fox Theater, one of the most famous theaters in the U.S.
Yeah.
Seats like 4,800 people, massive, gorgeous. However, the way it's designed, it's literally feels like a barn because it's so large that you would think you could hear the audience better. You actually hear them less.
Wow.
So even though they're enjoying the show, it's as a performer with our show especially, it has a lot of beats, a lot of comedic jokes that you kind of go off audience interactions. We were all like, I can't hear them. Am I going crazy? But it definitely varies. Some of my favorite cities or theater towns, if you will, that are known for this, Denver. Amazing supportive theater town, and the way that theater is designed, it's still intimate.
You were at the Performing Arts Center there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Buell.
Yeah, yeah, it's a beautiful space. Beautiful space.
Awesome. Portland was great. Seattle is a phenomenal theater town. Chicago, of course, is, I believe, still second to New York. And San Fran was lovely. Yeah, I look for those, equally the tier one cities that you like automatically think of, like Chicago, Seattle, San Fran. But the other great theater towns that you don't necessarily think of is Cleveland.
Wow.
Is an amazing theater town.
Really?
Yes. Their subscription base is massive. It's like all of Cleveland comes to see the shows that come through there. They have 3-week sit downs, whereas places like Seattle, who are large cities, only have 1 week because that's just what their subscription base is. Yeah. Cleveland is an amazing theater town. I'm looking forward to Boston still. And Texas has really great audiences we're going through.
Yes, they do. They do in Texas. You mentioned St. Louis. You know, that Fox Theater is supposed to be haunted. Did you hear that?
Yes, I did hear that, but I get creeped out by that stuff.
So. I've worked at that theater and all of these that he's talking about many, many times.
I'm sure.
And every single time, whenever we had to go into that theater, everybody was very trepidatious. It's a major theater in the country.
It's a beautiful space.
LA as well, honestly, because not my first time on Pantages. Yeah. Super.
But this
amazing.
Is your first stop. I mean, this is the first time any of your shows have stopped at the Pantages.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. This will be my first time at Pantages, Segerstrom, and San Diego Civic.
Cool.
Even though I'm from these areas.
Yeah. Going
LA,
home.
LA, honestly, is probably one of our top audiences as well.
Yeah. Wow.
Pantages is designed really well, too, and the audience feedback
is interesting little bit of trivia about it as well, which is that the carpeting backstage on the floor.
At the Pantages?
At the Pantages. Okay. Are you aware of that?
Is from the White House.
There's carpeting backstage on the floors. There's carpeting in and around.
Like in the dressing rooms?
Yes, and all that. Because of, do you know why?
No.
Because when Yul Brynner appeared there, that was in his contract.
For King and I.
Yes, not just for himself, but for all of the company because...
Barefoot.
Wow.
They appeared barefoot in the show. Wow. And that was a must. So that's why that's still there.
And whoever has to vacuum all the makeup bits from that carpet up is cursing Yul Brynner right now. So, ladies and gentlemen, we are talking to the man Cameron Bond today about the show Finding Neverland, now on stage at the Pantages Theater through March 12th. And tickets are available through Ticketmaster or at HollywoodPantages.com.
They are. And parental advisory recommended ages 7 and up, right?
Wow, you nailed it, Cameron. Nice job. That was exactly right. Yeah,
yeah,
that's exactly right.
And no one under 5 is admitted to the theater. Haze and fog effects are used in the production.
Oh, yeah.
Something that we need to know.
That's right.
And that was a big, awesome end of Act 1 moment with the whole pirate ship comes on stage.
Whoa.
And, a lot of fog, strobes in that number.
Wow.
We also have great projections that really help,
amazing.
Take the experience to the next level as well.
Absolutely.
It's such a fun, Peter Pan is such a fun story, but when you put all those effects together on stage, I love to see kids open up and how excited they are with that sort of thing. So grab your kids, go out to the Pantages Theater and have a great night.
That's right. And just online tickets, HollywoodPantages.com, Ticketmaster.com. cameronwalsh.com or pick up the telephone that's in your hand 24/7 and put it to your ear to dial 800-982-2787.
That's right. And obviously this is a tour, so you can find other tour dates as well if you're listening around the country, as we know so many of our listeners are. Find out if it's coming to your city.
Yeah,
go see Cameron.
And that site for this show is findingneverlandthemusical.com. Very easy to go to and spend some time on that, navigating through. You'll see our guest's handsome photo on that site as well, a little bit about him. And so it's come to that time now, our closing of the show, right?
And now, embarrassing moments.
Okay.
You hear the excitement build, Cameron?
two dudes in the studio of like track recording of. Whoa.
That's right. Well, we have our expansive studio audience that's sitting right behind you, my friend.
Yeah.
One of the things that we wanted to talk about with you was an embarrassing moment. Now, we ask all our performers to tell us something that happened sometime in your live performance career, maybe on film or television, where you've had a moment that you realized it would make you quit the business if you weren't a stronger person. Do you have anything that comes to mind?
Okay, this is less embarrassing as just painful. I was on the national tour of Beauty and the Beast as Gaston, and the big production number of Gaston, you know, with the big mug clinking number, we use real metal mugs. Like, they're weighted, they're heavy, and they're all metal.
This is No One Fights Like Gaston.
Yeah,
no, like, yeah, of course, a great song.
Right? It's like quick, you're doing all these mug clinks. And Gaston, at the near the end of the number, approaches LeFou from behind and gives him like a big punch to the side of the head, and he flies to the side. Flies to the side of stage, and on doing so, he swung his left arm back with his mug in his hand, and it clocked me, and right in the upper lip, and it went through my lip on the upper half, and instantly my lip started beyond gushing.
No one bleeds like Gaston.
Literally,
no.
Just a hole in my lip, gushing blood. And at the end of Gaston and LeFou don't leave. All the town people leave, and then they do Gaston reprise on stage. And so someone in the ensemble had like a scarf that they wear in costume, and I'm sure the wardrobe person lost her mind when this happened, but he took it off and threw it at me, and I literally just held a handkerchief all over my mouth while like trying to sing the rest of the song, just bleeding through the handkerchief, and then I go off stage, and they did like an announcement at intermission for any doctors or nurses in the audience.
Did you get stitched up? What did they do?
So they came back and they had liquid stitches. Oh. So they poured that in, which felt so good. And
then
I took some painkillers. I did act two with just like a
good Lord.
A bloody lip, puffy, you know, just look like like Kardashian, I guess, if you say. just a massive lip, bloody. And then at the end of the show, I had to go. We were performing in Arizona at the University of Arizona. So I went to on-campus hospital after the show.
Oh, man.
And they stitched. They got 10 stitches on the outside of my lip, on the inside of my lip. And then for the next week and a half, I had just a stitched lip.
Did you miss any performances?
No.
That's impressive, my friend. That's great.
Like, hey, Gaston could have stitches in his lip. It looks badass. Like, who cares?
I've had those liquid stitches.
I think we have a winner here.
Right? That's a secret.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, we've never had anyone.
It's going in the Hall of Fame for embarrassing moments, my friend.
Wow. Very painful experience. But my buddy Jake Bridges, shout out to you. Thanks for punching me in the face.
I think he deserves a round of applause. Don't you think?
A wild round of applause. Let's get our studio audience up and rolling. That's a good one, man. Cameron, you're such an amiable guy, and you have such a great way about you. What else you got going on? Do you have another project coming up after the tour? Are you working on anything else?
Neverland is, you know, where I'm at right now.
All-consuming?
Yeah, all-consuming, and I'm happy to be here and traveling the road and going to my hometown stops of Orange County and San Diego coming up.
So, well, we're glad to have you back at home.
We are indeed.
We're very glad to have you here on State of the Arts.
Absolutely.
So thank you.
Thanks for joining us, and we've said it many, many times during this program, ladies and gentlemen, Finding Neverland at the Pantages Theater. Don't miss it. It's only here for this week through, it's here through March 12th, and so that's a limited time in its final stages. Get the tickets now because it's selling huge.
Very
and
well.
It's something that is a beautiful, glorious, magical evening of theater.
That's right.
Andrew, thank you always for everything that you do here for State of the Arts.
Thank you, Michael. It's great to see you again.
Thank
Where
you,
will
sir.
I see you next week?
Next week on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.